Hour number three of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Coming up 30 minutes from now, you have game four of Celtics Heat. Miami has taken a commanding 3-0 series lead, and they're looking to sweep Boston out of the playoffs later tonight. Let's head out to the guest line right now and welcome in a man that played for the Miami Heat and also the Boston Celtics, won two championships with the Miami Heat. And that, of course, is Joel Anthony, who's now the GM for the Montreal Alliance. He's kind enough to join us on the Zach Gelb Show. Joel, appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. So you were undrafted. You know all about this Heat culture. Just what is it like for you right now to see the Heat one win away from getting to the NBA Finals with all these undrafted players?
I'm loving it. It's been great to see. Obviously, you know, the level of basketball, has been really good. Spo really has those guys rolling, and you know, they're playing extremely well. But you know, in a style that's unique to Miami, that represents that culture in terms of coming with that underdog mentality. And you're able to see that every day, and right now we're able to see the results of all that hard work that those guys have put in.
When you were in Miami, you knew how good of a coach Eric Spoelstra was, but I think the rest of us did not. What did you see from your coach back then? Because now he's pound for pound the best coach in the sport.
He was one of the things you need to be successful is consistency. And, those are some of the things that he drove into, all those teams, in terms of his attention to detail and, making sure that we're as well prepared, for one, like whatever we're going to go through. But just to be able to, go through all those practices, I remember just, every year, every day, honestly, like it was always something that he was always trying to perfect with us. And with the Heat, like that standard is something that carried over to everyone in the organization. And those are very important things to Spo, to make sure that guys were as well prepared, and that they played the style of basketball that would that represents that culture in terms of the hard work, the discipline that goes into it. And, like I said, he has them in a really good place right now.
Now, he was always controversial early on because there was that thought maybe Pat Riley would eventually come on back. And I know he was in the organization from 1997 to 2008 before becoming the head coach in that 2008 season. Was it obvious early on in your tenure with the team that he was going to be a really good head coach? Like, did you have a lot of belief in him early on?
I think we definitely. I know for me, I guess there's some bias. Spo is the coach that really gave me an opportunity, early on, and it's the same narrative. Giving an undrafted player an opportunity, the fact that he was looking to look wherever, and it was about if you were putting in the work and you were going to do well, you'd be given the opportunity, based on the work that you put in. So there was trust in terms of, the talent that he saw. It didn't matter where you came from, where you're drafted and what your, even like what your salary was. Spo was about, having guys come in to be able to produce regardless of, their, that type of background. And, you also saw like the work that he put in, the same way that, he demands, a lot of, a lot of hard work, a lot of hours. And, it's obviously extremely, difficult for some people to go through, physically, mentally, in Miami. Spo is someone that, that has grown up in that system as a professional. And he does it himself, and you see like the time that he puts in, and what all those things mean to him. So the work that he puts in, even though he's demanding it from his players, it's coming from him and his staff as well, with all the time and detail that they put into every individual, and then, you know, as a collective as well.
Joel Anthony here with us. So you have two championship rings from your time with the Miami Heat. When you look back at those teams, what are the memories that come back to mind all those years later?
The time we were to spend together, I think, you know, off the court more than anything, like just, you know, talks in the locker room and, you know, just those, you know, some of those downtime moments, you know, the plane rides, like those are the things that even then, and honestly, it was actually something Spo would talk to us about. Like, these are the things you're always going to remember. Like, we're going to look back on these things and, you know, definitely appreciate it, you know, so much more, because these are the things that, you know, even then, you know, we knew how special that was. You know, we knew how special those times were, and we never took it for granted. And I think that was something that was extremely important. You know, fortunate to, you know, obviously play on such a good team, but it was also such a close team as well. And so those are the things that we probably look back and appreciate more than anything.
Joe Anthony, the night where LeBron James elected to take his talent to South Beach, what do you remember about that evening?
I remember being at home and at first wondering why I had opted out of my contract at that time. And this is a huge mistake for me, and there wasn't any room for me. I wanted to be back, but, you know, not being too sure how the business of basketball was going to be. Like, Miami was obviously where I always wanted to return to, because of the opportunity. But, you know, obviously with Bron signing, like, that was, you know, that really changed it because of the expectations that everyone had. And, you know, my agent eventually, you know, explained to me and, you know, calmed me down and told me that, you know, there's still going to be an opportunity. And, you know, I was very excited, you know, that there was a possibility for me to, you know, re-sign with them and to be a part of that, you know, for them to want me to be a part of that. So, like, when he, you know, made that announcement, it was, you know, extremely excited, you know, for me to see that. And just like everyone else, I remember looking outside my condo and seeing fireworks right after he said that he was taking his talent to South Beach. You know, I saw all the fireworks outside downtown Miami. You know, people were excited, you know, from day one, obviously. So I was definitely the same way.
And now LeBron just wrapped up year 20 in the association after getting swept out of the conference finals by the Nuggets. He talked about how much he has to contemplate his future, and it starts all the retirement speculation. Were you surprised when you heard that from LeBron last night, or not so much?
A little bit, just because no one's, you know, thinking too much of it. Obviously, it was something down the line, but, you know, everything with him, you know, you're thinking of at least a couple more years, which is still a lot. You know, that would put him at, what, like 22, maybe even if it was just a couple more. And at his age, but he's obviously held off Father Time for an extremely long time, and has played at a high level, you know, even up to this year, you know, was still able to play at an extremely high level. So it was a little surprising to hear that, but, you know, it's hard for, I guess, people to realize that he is, you know, human, even though, you know, he obviously does extraordinary things on the court. But, you know, this is something that all basketball players, you know, even, you know, someone as great as him, you know, have to think about and have to contemplate. And so, you know, I'm sure he'll, you know, take the time, you know, to get away from the game a little bit and, you know, just kind of go over things, you know, with himself and, you know, with his family, and think about what, you know, he wants to do next.
I got to think he'll be returning, though, for a 21st season, right?
I would assume so. Yeah, I would definitely assume so. But obviously, you know, like he said this right after losing, you know, in the conference finals, and like you said, like getting swept. So, you know, the emotions and everything else is, those things are still raw and, you know, new, and it's very difficult to deal with getting, you know, losing in the playoffs, especially when you get that far. I'm sure after he takes some time, like I said, like he'll be able to come to a more sound, you know, decision. But, you know, the talks about it isn't something that's too out of the ordinary. It's just you never really heard it from him, which I think is what people are really surprised about.
Joel Anthony, in this next great chapter of Heat basketball, you see the greatness of Jimmy Butler. I've been talking about, like, he has a killer instinct like Michael Jordan and also the late, great Kobe Bryant, and he had these playoff heroics like Kawhi Leonard as well, as we've seen throughout the years. Well, what do you see when you watch Jimmy Butler play?
One is toughness. I see the toughness and that will, he likes to say, like, he's just out there hooping. And, you know, just his ability to, you know, be able to stay within that moment and play, extremely high level basketball, but, you know, also on both ends of the court, you know, which is what's, you know, extremely impressive, as well. You know, they were really just built for, you know, that organization. So it's great to see him, you know, have success there. But, you know, he's really just, you know, on, you know, a really incredible, like, tough-minded, you know, player that, is obviously, like, leading his team to, you know, what appears to be, you know, an eventual finals appearance again.
And you got to feel good for Bam, too, because he's been up and down as well, Bam Adebayo. He's really started to come together these last few games, and he's been a huge key for Miami to be able to go on a run like this.
Yeah, and he's someone else that fits, you know, very well into, you know, into the Heat culture. You know, a tough player that, you know, again plays both sides of the ball. More of a prototype big for this generation of the NBA. So. And it's all about, you know, his steady improvement. You know, he's still learning, and nothing is going to get you, you know, more prepared, you know, to have success in this league than going through these battles in the playoffs. And, you know, he's been able to, you know, take this time to to continue to improve. And, you know, as, you know, from the Heat standpoint, you know, as long as he's trending up, you know, at the right time, you know, you couldn't be happier. So, you know, it's definitely great, you know, for him to have, you know, this success now at the highest level when his team needs it the most.
Put on your basketball cap here, Joel Anthony. When you go out to the Western Conference, we know the great career so far of Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray being back and at this level for the Denver Nuggets is so big. Just what stands out to you about what you've been seeing so far when you watch Denver?
How balanced they are. You know, they share the ball really well. To have a player, like Jokic, who's, you know, so unselfish, and, you know, the ball is, and especially for a big, to have, you know, the ball run through him as much as it does, and, you know, he's always able to make, you know, the right plays for them, and when he has to, you know, for himself as well. So it's similar to, you know, so someone like Bron, who's, you know, obviously been able to play, like, you know, amazing, unselfish basketball. They're extremely well coached as well, by Mike Malone. I'm actually a fan of his. He was with us with the national team, with the Canadian national team years ago, but has always been a really good coach, and it's great to, you know, see him have, you know, have success. And like I said, the balance and the confidence that team is playing with right now, and they have, you know, an absolute star, you know, superstar in Jokic. It's a lot of really good basketball that we're able to see.
Before we let you run, Joel Anthony, this new chapter for you as the GM of the Montreal Alliance, just what have you kind of learned about yourself and how you've been enjoying the opportunity as of late?
Oh, it's been great for me, to be able to transition into, something else within the game, something else that I love. Like, the front office side has been a lot of fun for me. It's been a lot of work. I've definitely, I have a new appreciation for, some of the executives that I've been able to know throughout my time of playing, just because of everything that goes into it. But, a great learning experience and, time from, for me to be able to help out my basketball community back home in Canada as a whole, but, more importantly for, the city I was born and raised in Montreal.
Well, thanks so much for doing this. Good luck the rest of the way, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate you.
You got it. Thanks so much. This is Joel Anthony. This is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break. We'll come on back. We'll update you some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio with the News Brief next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Alrighty, news brief time. The Denver Nuggets are off to the NBA Finals. They sweep the Lakers. The brooms were out. Mike Malone says Nikola Jokic sent a message to any doubters.
I think he's shown other people nationally that he's real. Like, what he's doing is real. The MVPs are real. The triple-doubles are real. All the narratives, the silly narratives this year, are just that, silly and somewhat ignorant. And I think Nikola has gone through three rounds now where he's averaging a triple-double in the playoffs. Have you seen any stat padding out there? I'm serious. Like enough of the silliness. Like, the guy is a great player. Give him his damn respect.
That's a heck of a job, Hickey, by Coach Mike Malone. I absolutely love that answer because it has been jackassery this entire year over this stinking MVP. You want to tell me Embiid deservingly won the MVP? That's fine. You could have told me Embiid. You could have told me Joker. You could have told me Giannis Antetokounmpo. But how people were trying to just kind of undermine what Nikola Jokic does, and how Mark Jackson, I made a mistake, left him out of the top five of the MVP. And I love Kendrick Perkins, but what Kendrick Perkins said about Nikola Jokic in the voting process was an absolute disgrace. It was just so much verbal diarrhea where people are trying to take away from this guy's game or find flaws with this guy's game. The only thing they could say is the guy's won a championship. Well, yeah, the last 2 years, his vice president pretty much and Jamal Murray's been out with an injury. I just don't understand all the negativity from some about Nikola Jokic, why some had a problem in embracing his greatness on the basketball court, Hickey.
I would agree. It's perfectly said by Michael Malone. Obviously, you can also hear and sense the frustration because he's been living it, especially this entire year, because this year is really where, I don't know why this word, by the way, has gotten popular this year, but at least for me, I've been hearing it a lot more, the discourse. So if you want to use it here, this year is especially where the Nikola Jokic MVP discourse really got off the rails and really went so far beyond anything on the basketball court that it, again, as Mike Malone said, just ridiculous and ignorant. And you could tell he's been sitting on that for a while, and this is kind of the opportunity and the stage. Now that you are going to the NBA Finals, you've been to a place now you haven't gotten before. He's starting to let it unleash. And if they win the finals, win four more games, I think Michael Malone's going to have a lot of, as they would say in the WWE, promo cutting going forward.
All I would do is just keep on cutting those promos with the Jokic brothers, with the Joker brothers, because did you see those two big guys last night? We know how intimidating they are. They look like fat kids in a candy store. And they were, you know when you go to a trampoline as a kid and you play the game popcorn, where you jump up and down on the trampoline and you have someone else that's sitting kind of cross leg and they just go right off the trampoline all the way up into the air. That's what Nikola Jokic's brothers were doing last night with Mike Malone. They were throwing him up in the air last night. That was crazy.
They made that look too easy. Michael Malone's not a small guy, and they made that look like he was throwing. Well, like they made him look like he was 8 years old. Like, okay,
yeah,
like this is
like
your,
when you stand next to me,
toddler of a son who's going to throw him up and down and have a little fun here. That was just, I mean, they made that look like, I saw a lot of people say, a ragdoll.
Those brothers got to be, what, 6'10"? 7'4"?
And they are massive.
Mike Malone's 6'2".
Massive.
So he's not like a string bean. I get that. But compared to those guys, he's like a grape.
But he's still, like, that's 6'2" is big enough where you should not be throwing a grown man up in the air that easily. And they did.
How tall are you?
5'11".
And you're very lengthy, let's just say. Like, you're a lengthy 5'11".
170.
Yeah.
For, you know, height and weight scale.
If I threw you up in the air, it would be very similar to the Jokic brothers.
No,
no. 100%, bro.
No.
Bro, I'm telling you.
You are not like the Jokic brothers, and I am not like Michael Malone.
Yes. All right, how about Perloff? Did you see what I did to Perloff a few weeks ago when he tried to go up against me in those drills? He's like, I didn't realize your strength in that moment, and Perloff is bigger than you.
That was pathetic.
He actually confused me because he went the wrong way, and I had a slow first step just because I was so confused. He started running the other direction.
Well, he was the only man, I think, in the history of Oklahoma drills to drop back in pass coverage as their first reaction. So
I'm trying to think when I was when I was going to Sunday Night Baseball. I saw two people coming back from the Mets game into the city on the LIRR, the Long Island Railroad. They did an Oklahoma drill in the middle of the Long Island Railroad.
Like on the train?
On the train.
While
just out of nowhere while I was moving. It wasn't a packed train.
Wow.
And they go, Oklahoma drill. And they were lying down. They jumped up and they both engaged and tried to tackle one another.
Wow.
And they were friendly. Like afterwards, they were like patting each other. I love you, bro. I love you, bro.
Meatheads. Sunday fun day
stupid.
Right there. Holy
I'm sitting
cow.
There. I go, what a bunch of morons. First off, who lies down on the floor of a train? Like, well, on the that's disgusting.
Sounds like common sense there has been long gone.
Yeah. Mike Malone says Nikola Jokic's rise to greatness has been nothing short of incredible.
I always think about this and laugh because that first summer league in Vegas, you know, 300 pounds, out of shape. Hey, he's a nice player. You know, he's a nice. No one. And if anybody tells you different, they're full of but no one ever could have seen that he'd be a two-time MVP passing Wilt Chamberlain, it seems like, every other night. And that speaks to his dedication to his craft, getting in great shape, and understanding for him to fulfill his potential, he had to work harder. And he's done that.
You heard the Queens boy come out in him right there, Mike Malone, with how he was speaking to the media right there. He's been incredible. And, you know, it reminds me so much, Hickey, of the Bucks when they won their championship. Because it was the same thing. Giannis won two championships, but people didn't want to give him his due. They were trying to take away from Giannis Antetokounmpo. And the moment when Giannis won that championship and put up that 50-burger up against the Phoenix Suns, it was all of a sudden, oh, Giannis Antetokounmpo is the best player in the league. Like, Nikola Jokic has been this great the last 2 years. Now they're in the NBA Finals, and if he gets four more wins, without a doubt, everyone's going to say he's the best player in basketball. It's the same thing.
This is a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Does he have to win the finals to get the respect he deserves, or do you think yesterday was enough to at least have people go into next year
especially
and not have
three.
A stupid MVP argument and basically knock his game for whatever reasons that they want to do?
That three last night was one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
He had like won a game in this series where it's just falling back 30 feet over the head, hand in the face.
And we're supposed to get Mike Breen on at some point this week. I want to ask him about that because the bang call, I know that's a signature Mike Breen call. It was just perfect for that one. And at first they thought it was a two and then they reversed it and made it a three. That was just crazy. To answer your question, he shouldn't need to win the next four games, but you know, the dopey, minuscule amount of people will then turn out to be like the loudest in that, and they'll try to take victory laps because people just don't like to admit when they're wrong. That's how I would say to that. But if you can't watch basketball right now and understand how great Nikola Jokic is, I just don't want to hear from you. I don't even want to watch the game with you. Jamal Murray, who I love. I've been a big fan of Jamal Murray for a while. On what changed for the Nuggets in the second half? I thought I was going to be A-OK for my trip to Denver, go watch the game, game five. Hickey was getting off the hook. He was celebratory texting me throughout the game last night, thinking it was over, it was done, it was a lock. 15-point lead for the Lakers at halftime, and then at the end of the third quarter, it was Denver by five. Here's Jamal Murray.
We know that they're going to come out aggressive, though. It's less about that and more about us weathering the storm and staying with each other. You know, we're down 15 and a half, and then we came in the third quarter ready to play and ready to take the lead, I think. So it was just a great team effort all around. Everybody came in and stepped up.
He's so special, and he's awesome. And I know it, people don't love when I say this, but I say Nikola Jokic is the best player on the Nuggets. But for them to win a championship, Jamal Murray is the most valuable. And that's not taking away from the Joker. You saw Joker take over the game last night. But having Jamal Murray back and Jamal Murray being a lethal threat for them, it just makes that team a championship team, where the last 2 years you could tell how much they were missing him. Like, Hickey, last night was his worst game in the series. He still went 10 of 18 from the field, Jamal Murray, and had 25 points. He had 31, 37, 37, and 25 in that series. That was good enough to win the Western Conference Finals MVP. I know it ended up going to Nikola Jokic, but look at those stats. If it wasn't for you having the best player in the league on your team, he would have maybe on any other team won that award. It's crazy.
He was tremendous, and they both, Jokic and Murray, complement each other so well,
yeah.
Where Murray feeds off of Jokic. They feed each other, obviously. It's impossible for defenses to try to double cover both. As soon as you double cover one, the other's open. It's a really deadly duo.
And Murray's, I know he's performed really well in the postseason before, but you saw how Chris Middleton had that coming out party also when the Bucks won the championship. Now a lot more people are starting to realize how great Jamal Murray is. It is just phenomenal. And he goes on these runs, man, where there's just no way to stop him. Like, he just goes off.
I mean, you take the fourth quarter of game two, the first half of game three, three quarters, he had 53 points. Like that, like what? If you're the Lakers, you can't do anything to stop that.
Not even going to church would even help you in that case. There's no way to slow this guy down. LeBron James says he will mull his retirement and future this offseason.
We'll see what happens going forward. But I don't know. I got a lot to think about, to be honest. And just for me personally, going forward with the game of basketball, I got a lot to think about.
Yeah, you can think about it. You're 38. You just wrapped up year 20. I get it's the heat of the moment, but I just don't see how LeBron James walks away with, like, no fanfare and not having a year-long send-off or at least a month send-off as well. I think he'll definitely be coming back. I think that's more so either it being used as a distraction so people don't talk about this sweep, or he's trying to use that as leverage to go out there and get this team to seriously improve the roster in the offseason, even though I thought Pelinka did a good job with the situation that was at hand for this year. Rob Pelinka, this is from today, says he hopes to keep this team together next season.
Keeping that continuity is going to be very important. We ultimately got knocked out by a team that has great continuity. They've got a group of players that have been together for several seasons, and it shows in the way they play. But that's a high priority for us. We feel like we've got a group of special players in the locker room. They enjoy playing with each other. Darvin enjoys coaching them. We know there's more growth and improvement in that group, especially if we get a training camp together. So I would say that's a high priority to keep our core players together.
And obviously it all starts with LeBron James. Rob Pelinka says he hopes LeBron is back next year.
LeBron has given as much to the game of basketball as anyone who's ever played. And when you do that, you earn a right to decide whether you're going to give more. And I think sometimes we put athletes, entertainers on a pedestal, but they're humans. And just like us, they have inflection points in their career. And our job as a Lakers organization is to support any player on our team if they reach a career inflection point. Obviously, our hope would be that his career continues, but we want to, again, just give him the time to have that inflection point and support him along the way in everything he does.
He's saying all the right things, Hickey, and ultimately it's not his decision. LeBron doesn't need the help of the Lakers to really make this decision. He could use his leverage to then go get more players. I don't think he's actually going to walk away. It does not seem, just by hearing those two clips, Hickey, that Rob Pelinka is at all nervous that LeBron's going to retire after this year.
No. And again, everyone's been talking about today. No one really believes the words he's saying in terms of him actually retiring after this season. So you could say what you want. We'll support him. It's his time. He deserves to make this decision, which he absolutely does. But when push comes to shove, everyone expects him in the NBA next year.
Now, let me ask you this, because I think last night, just following you on Twitter, Ryan_Hickey3, did I get that right?
Yes, sir.
That you were actually kind of like believing some of this noise last night. Now, that was in the moment, so I'm not going to hold that against you. But what changed from last night where I think you were believing more in the retirement than where you are now, where it's like, okay, you think he's just going to be playing on a different team next season.
I mean, watching that press conference, he sounded like someone I've never heard before. He was
really?
Very cryptic. He was very, like, evasive in anything about the future. You never hear LeBron talk about retirement. He never flirts with when he's going to retire. He's always talking about playing longer and longer, not shorter and shorter.
But that seemed like a lot of athlete speak. That's what it did. It really seemed like an older athlete, and in the moment, you know, heat of the moment, you really don't want to answer the question. You just go, I have to contemplate a lot of things. That's what I took from it. Finally, Celtics up 5-3, early stages, 10:22 to go in this first quarter. We'll see if Boston has any heart tonight. Malcolm Brogdon of the Celtics say that the team has lost their identity.
Our identity has waned all year long. We've been trying to figure out who we are because we're such a great, talented scoring team. But when we don't make shots, we got to rely on our defense, and our defense isn't consistent every night. We haven't been consistently great defensively all year long, and that was the team's identity last year. And I think that slipped away from us. We've had spurts where we've been great defensively, but not consistently. And honestly, we've struggled in every series we've played. I think we've taken a few steps back. I think in these playoffs overall, I think it's showing because we're playing a very disciplined, consistent, well-coached team. But I think in the Atlanta series, I think in the Philly series, I think we got away with things that now are biting us.
Yeah, you play with fire, now you're getting burned. There's no doubt about it. They got away with so much in those first two series. And this team does not have the killer instinct. And if Ime Udoka is this much of a difference, you guys have so much talent. It's like you got to get over the Ime Udoka thing. And it's surprising throughout this entire year that it appears like they have not gotten over the Ime Udoka situation and why he's no longer the coach of the Celtics. All right, that's the news brief.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
So Denver is off to the NBA Finals. They're waiting to see how long it's going to take Miami to join them. Miami up 3-0 in this series. 6 minutes to go in the first quarter. Miami trying to do what the Nuggets did last night, except this will be on Miami's home court, sweep their opponent out of the playoffs. Miami just hit a three, so it's 15-12. We'll see if that will happen tonight. And also, we'll get to the scheduling issue in the NBA in just a second. The NHL, they will adjust. I don't think the dates are set in stone, at least in hockey, from my understanding of the situation. But you have the Florida Panthers, who are up 3-0 in their series. They took a 3-0 series lead last night up against Carolina. And Bobrovsky has just been sensational for them. And we know what Tkachuk did the first two games of that series, being the overtime winner in both of them. The first one went four overtimes. It almost went to a fifth. And the second one was over very quickly. But tonight, I was expecting the Stars to maybe go get a victory here, down 2-0 to the Vegas Golden Knights. And Hickey, the Golden Knights, with 5:12 left in the first period, are up 3-0. So there's a chance that we see a sweep in Florida for the Panthers up against Carolina. Now, let's see how this game ends first, but there's a chance that the Golden Knights can sweep the Stars. We already know the Nuggets did sweep the Los Angeles Lakers, and there's a very good chance that the Heat sweep the gutless Boston Celtics tonight. This is just insanity. And my biggest issue is, hockey, I'm pretty sure they will adjust. The NBA doesn't. So if this series is over tonight, the first NBA Finals game, it's set in stone, it's locked in. It's not until June 1st. So if this ends tonight, Hickey, you will have 9 days until we'll get a game. Like, that's ridiculous.
Next Thursday. Very dumb. I don't know why they do that. I don't know. Like, it hurts not only them just not having, you know, being in the conversation now for 9 days. Also hurts the product on the court. They're used to playing now
money every
other night. And now you're going to have 9 days off. It's kind of like when college football had that huge gap at the BCS where you would play like December 1st and
then
like January 10th is a national title game. You're like 30 days in between. So stupid. But that's a long time to be sitting around and doing nothing.
And I would think you just answered the question there. It's the NBA trying to be the NFL or college football at the time where you have the date set in stone and you make it more of an event and everyone gets their hotels. And I know it also depends on where the games are being played and if your team's in it, but I got to think it's just from a money standpoint, them locking in those dates and then hoping more and more people make their, you know, I know you got to wait for the game to decide to figure out your travel plans too, so it's a little complicated, But maybe just more so that's like a corporate thing as well, where you know people are going anyway. So I guess you want to give people time. Like, it really doesn't even make sense. You can move that up easily.
But also, too, on the flip side, if this went seven, that would be what? Monday night is when the series would end, right? It's today's Tuesday, game four. So it's every other day.
And
so it's like
what?
There's not even that much of a time gap. If there was, let's say, two game sevens and went the other way, you're talking about a quick turnaround anyway to get the series started.
And the more I think about it, you can't even use trying to become the NFL or college football as an excuse, because it's not as if you go to a set location. You now know that you're going to Denver for a few of those games.
Right. You don't know when. We still don't know where game one is.
And then Miami. Well, yeah, it's going to be Denver.
Well, sure, but
you think
the
Boston's
Celtics
coming
come,
back,
I'm just
Mr.
saying,
Heat?
Like if you're the NBA and you're like, oh, we're going to have it set in stone because, like you said, if we want to get people there and aid travel, sure,
you have enough
book
days.
Denver for games one and two and assume, again, barring history, that they'll be hosting games one and two. But it's not like, again, you even know where truly the series starts at this point. So it doesn't make any sense to have 9 days potentially if you're the Heat, 10 days if you're the Nuggets in between games. So stupid.
And if there is a game five in this series, that would be Thursday night, right? Yeah, that would be Thursday night because today's Tuesday. It's like, if this series wraps up tonight, which your expectation it is and my expectation it is, don't you go, and I know it's a holiday weekend, but I know you want to give a few days for media and all that. Shouldn't there be a game Sunday night or even Memorial Day night? That Monday night, everyone's off, or a lot of people are off. You can have Memorial Day evening, everyone coming back from travel plans and everything, and you give it a jump start. If this is sweep, this makes no sense, and they're going to wait till Thursday. Well, what the heck are people going to talk about with the NBA with this much of a buildup? Especially, and you know the other thing that pisses me off too? All these people. Oh, the ratings are going to be horrible if it's Denver and if it's Miami. Oh, the ratings. I think this is going to be a really good series. So how many people now get caught up in the ratings, Hickey? I feel like when we were growing up, and we're not ancient, right? We're younger voices here. I don't think really anyone gave like a rat's ass about the ratings of these games.
Well, I was just going to ask, who actually cares? Like, if you actually care about the ratings, you are
a loser.
Like, who? If you're watching
you
the game and
you're
enjoying it, you're not enjoying it more because, oh, wow, everyone else is watching it.
But the same conversation happened, remember, the Final Four this year. No, now I consider you kind of blue blood, but people are like, no blue bloods. Oh, the ratings are going to be horrible. And what a year, by the way, for Florida sports, too. You got the Florida Panthers. You have the Miami Heat, and you had Miami and FAU go to the Final Four. Now, Dolphins made the playoffs too. We'll see what the Marlins do. This is bonkers, Hickey.
Not bad. Good time to be living in Miami.
And we didn't mention any of the college football teams. Not really much to mention, but.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, my Mario Cristobal right now not doing a good job getting the Hurricane fans riled up, that's for sure. Having a reason to believe. But maybe this is, you know, the momentum carries over into this year, and 2023 is the year of Miami.
It really is. It's crazy what was so far. Now, we'll see if any of those teams could actually win a championship. You know the Heat are going to be as tough as an out as they could be in the NBA Finals. I know you were leaning Denver. I'll leave Denver as well. I'll lean Denver as well on that one. But this Florida Panthers team, if I had to ask you right now, who do you feel more confident in to go win a championship? Is it Miami with the Heat or is it the Florida Panthers? I think the answer is the Florida Panthers. Because you look at Florida, first off, they're an excellent team. And I know they had the fewest points entering this postseason, but this team a year ago won the President's Trophy, had the most points in the league. So you know they had the talent. And you look at a coaching change, sure, but this team, with the way that they're playing and their goaltender is standing up there like he's a brick wall right now, I would look at the Florida Panthers as having a better chance to win their championship than Miami to go out there and win the NBA Finals.
You know what's ironic about both of those teams? Last year, both top seeds in the playoffs bounced, and now Panthers fewest points in the playoffs, Heat last team in the Eastern Conference in the playoffs. Now both one win away each from going to the respective finals.
Now, it's more stunning what Miami is doing compared to the Florida Panthers because this just happens all the time in hockey. It really does. When the year where the Flyers got the Stanley Cup final, you had a 7-8. A few years ago, you had all four division winners go out in the first round. Remember Tampa Bay a few years ago? They were one of them with having a pretty much like a Boston Bruins kind of season. But you look at both those teams, the Heat and the Panthers, the Heat were down late in the fourth quarter of the second playing game. And people forget about this because everyone talks about the comeback. They were down 3-1, the Florida Panthers, to the Bruins. Down 3-1 to the team with the most points and the most wins. So it's just been absolute bonkers, but I hate to use the word destiny. It seems like the Florida Panthers throwing the rats and everything are a team of destiny this year. So maybe
the rats, huh? That's doing it for you? The destiny is within the rats?
It's a long time going back to Van Beesbrook. Throwing the rats. It's a great tradition. Even got to see some of those rats go on the road in Carolina, that great home ice advantage. The Panthers said, not so fast. All right, we'll take a break of the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll talk some LeBron next. Also, you will hear some comments from DeAndre Hopkins.